Support for FAQ City comes from WFAE members and Bojangles. For over 40 years, Charlotte-based Bojangles has provided biscuits from scratch, hand-breaded fried chicken, and freshly steeped iced tea. More info on the 48-step biscuit-making process at bojanglesbiscuits.com.
If you're a frequent WFAE listener, by chance you've already heard about this new podcast called She Says, out this month. It examines Charlotte's systems of handling sexual assault cases, which admittedly don't get the most attention from the media or the public. Well, today, alongside our She Says podcast, we want to devote some time to this topic, specifically a listener question about some eyebrow-raising actions by the police department a few years back. And just a quick warning here, by its nature, this topic may be troubling for some listeners. Okay, let's get started. It's FAQ City, the podcast from WFAE where we take a new question every episode.
So many questions. So many questions.
And explain it here. I'm Nick Delacanel. Let's begin. Okay, so today I'm actually joined in the studio by our question asker. Her name is Margaret Peoples, and she's a listener. Hey, Margaret.
Hello, Nick.
And so, what's your question?
Okay, I had read, this is back in 2016, that rape kits had been destroyed. And some of the rape kits were for cases that were open. And so I was wondering what's going on and wanted to get some more information.
Yeah, like why were these kits destroyed, right?
Right. Why?
Okay, just a quick pause here. Margaret is 68. She's a grandmother. She was actually nice enough to bring us a batch of cookies when she came to the studio. She says she's never personally experienced sexual assault, but growing up, she did experience trauma and has a lot of empathy for people who've gone through traumatic experiences. So when she read this 2016 report in the Charlotte Observer, she was horrified. The report found that over the course of roughly 15 years, from 2000 to 2016, the Charlotte-Mecklenburg Police Department destroyed more than 1,000 untested sexual assault kits. That's about one of every three they'd collected. A Michigan State researcher told the paper she had never seen a number that high. The kits are important because they contain clothes, DNA, and other biological evidence from the assault, which can be used in court. So, back now to Margaret.
I guess I was just thinking that if you go through the trauma of the rape, the reporting, and then to find that your kit was destroyed, that might have helped you and prevented any future. I mean, when you think about that, and why are you supposed to report? Maybe it's not going to necessarily help you with all that you're going to suffer, but you think of the next person in line. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was just, why was this done? What is the reasoning here?
Well, today we're going to do our best at finding an answer to this question, the best we can anyway. And while we're on this topic, we want to pull back the curtain and see the process that some of these victims go through to get these kits in the first place. And that is where we'll begin. At the Children and Family Services Center on 5th Street in Uptown, actually just a block away from police headquarters, our listener, Margaret, agreed to tag along with us. Inside, up on the fourth floor, is Charlotte's local rape crisis center called Safe Alliance.
Hey, are you Corey?
And that's where we meet Corey Goldstein.
I am the director of the Sexual Trauma Resource Center with Safe Alliance.
She was kind enough to meet up with me and Margaret and explain a little bit more about these kits and how they work. So you guys actually have a sexual assault kit that you guys keep on hand, I guess, for training purposes.
Yes, so it's a way that we can train our staff and our volunteers so that they can help survivors know a little bit more about what to expect.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's take a look at what's inside then.
Okay.
The kit is about the size of a shoebox, maybe a little smaller, and inside are all manners of paper, envelopes, bags, and DNA swabs. There's also a 9-page questionnaire where you'd have to describe all the details of the assault. Margaret says she was impressed.
I expected it to be pretty thorough, evidence-wise. Looks like it is. That's good. That's reassuring.
Yes, it is.
It's thorough for sure, but also tedious and intrusive. The collection process can take hours. That's hours of hospital nurses taking DNA from your mouth and genitals, asking questions about the assault.
It's a process that is pretty tedious and can, in a way, sometimes trigger survivors.
Yeah, I've heard it can be very traumatic, almost to the same level as the actual assault.
Because they are talking about what happened to them, as well as this exam. As I mentioned, there are different swabs that can be somewhat intrusive.
Which really brings us back to Margaret's question. If a person went through all this, how could the police department have just tossed it away later, and before any of the DNA had even been tested? Well, coming up after our break, we get to the police department's explanation. Stay with us. That's just ahead.
Hey, FAQ City fans. This episode of FAQ City came about from one question from one charlatan. And there are millions of charlatans with millions of questions, which we want to answer. And that kind of reporting, it takes time and resources and a little support. If you love FAQ City and the stories you've heard on it, take a second and help sustain them with a pledge of support at WFAE.org. Any donation amount will get you a Public Radio Nerd sticker, and any donation amount will help sustain this podcast for the community, by the community. Again, that's by hitting the donate button right now on WFAE.org. And now, back to the program.
Okay, we're back, and before we go any further, there are a few things you should know. For one, Charlotte's police department is not the only one that's destroyed sexual assault kits. In 2015, the Fayetteville Police Department discovered that they had destroyed some 330 kits. The police chief called a press conference and publicly apologized.
I'm distraught. I'm frustrated. I'm angry that truly one person may not get justice.
CMPD, on the other hand, has never publicly apologized. And the department did not want to be interviewed for this story. We asked them a few times, they declined. But CMPD did provide a number of emails and other information that gives us an idea as to how this happened. The gist of it is, in many of these cases where kits were destroyed, police detectives just didn't think they'd be that useful in court. So I'll give you some examples. Consider if a woman was raped by her husband. In that case, we know the identity of the man. The issue, instead, is consent. Or in other cases, the victim perhaps decided they didn't want to go to trial, so detectives held on to the kits for a year and then tossed them. Or in still other cases, detectives deemed the claims unfounded and prosecutors didn't move forward. Now, the Charlotte Observer also found that at least some of the destroyed kits, 72 according to their analysis, were from open cases. The department later said those cases were mislabeled, but they never offered a more complete explanation. So there are still a lot of things we don't know and that the police department has not been forthcoming about, like who signed off on the destruction and why didn't anyone in the police department speak up and question whether this was the best practice, because there are reasons why the department might want to test these kits and keep them on hand even if they already know a perpetrator's identity. For example, there's a national DNA database called CODIS. It's been around since the 90s, and it can help link different cases together. Consider this from a recent Stanford University study.
We found that many people committed both non-stranger assaults and stranger assaults. So one person's acquaintance can be another person's stranger.
That's Lawrence Wine, who co-authored the study using data from Detroit. He also found that police departments would actually save an average $81 for every dollar spent testing the kits because of future sexual assaults it would help prevent. So back at the Rape Crisis Center, Margaret says that, like me, she also still has a number of questions that linger. So yeah, I guess we haven't really answered everything then. There's still questions out there that you have.
Well, sure. But I'm glad we've investigated it. I'm glad you asked them the question. And like I said, maybe someone's going to stand up 5-10 years down the road and explain what they did and why. That happens rarely, but I don't know.
Well, until then, there are steps being taken to make things better. As of 2009, it's now illegal in North Carolina to throw out these kits before the crime is solved, and CMPD now tests every kit it receives. And the recent Me Too movement has brought a lot more attention to the issue of sexual assault. In fact, Safe Alliance says they've had a 43% increase in people reaching out to them over the last year, and they've noticed a lot more media attention as well. For example, there's this podcast, and the new She Says podcast, which we mentioned at the beginning, which is entirely devoted to the issue of sexual assault. First episode is out now. All this to say, our citizens, our leaders, and us, we're listening. Well, that's it for now. We want to extend a special thanks to Safe Alliance. If you are in need of help or counseling, they have a 24-hour hotline and lots of resources for people who've gone through sexual assault. We have links to them on our website, wfae.org/FAQCity. As always, you can find and subscribe to this podcast on NPR One, Apple Podcasts, and Google Play. And of course, we're looking for more of your excellent, thoughtful questions about Charlotte. They really can be about anything. Send us yours at wfae.org. And who knows, we might just search for an answer on an upcoming episode. Until next time, I'm Nick Delacanal.
Support for FAQ City comes from WFAE members and Bojangles. For over 40 years, Charlotte-based Bojangles has provided biscuits from scratch, hand-breaded fried chicken, and freshly steeped iced tea. More info on the 48-step biscuit-making process at bojanglesbiscuits.com.